Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to...
We are officially out, and we are here to mope about it. Welcome into Scrambled Eggs, everyone, your official Marquette basketball podcast. Here on Crack Sidewalks, Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you. As you all, I'm sure, know by now, Marquette will not be in the NCAA tournament. We're headed to the NIT. Phil and I are both very sad.
Yeah, and if you didn't know about it, why are you listening to a podcast about Marquette
basketball?
Yeah,
amazing you found us, if you didn't know that already.
That's some awesome Googling.
We're going to talk about Marquette not being in the tournament. We're not going to talk too much about the tournament itself, since Marquette is not in it. We're going to look ahead to the NIT and the matchup with Harvard, break down that matchup a little bit, and I guess just talk about the program in general and see where the rest of the topics take us. But Phil, heading into Sunday, take me through like kind of your emotions and when you got the official news on the selection show, even though the audio was delayed, that Marquette was not in the NCAA tournament.
We're going to have to reserve a little bit of time to talk about how, when I didn't think it was possible, they managed to screw up the selection show even worse than 2 years ago. But neither here nor there for right now. I was going into Sunday morning. I was doing some mental gymnastics, getting me in a place to say, okay, maybe they're in one of the last four, or they're one of the last four in. And then, Davidson went and beat Rhode Island, so that was a bid stealer, and started looking at it. And it was going to be a long shot, to be sure. But then when they started rolling out, I was oddly at peace with it, in a weird way, because I had finally come to terms with, well, we're not getting in, I guess. And we're going to play in the NIT, so that could be a little exciting. So there's still basketball. Maybe I've just become resigned to our fate. I don't know. But I wasn't as depressed in the immediate aftermath of Miami showing up on the selection slide as I thought I would be. How about you?
Yeah, I was in the mode of my general life philosophy of expect the worst and hope for the best. And so I was not optimistic. As I have not made a secret on this podcast, I've thought Marquette has been out of it since they lost to DePaul. And as it turns out, losing to DePaul down the stretch when your season's on the line was probably a pretty bad idea. But what cracked me up was on Sunday was when Davidson beat Rhode Island, so many Marquette tweeters were saying, well, Marquette's definitely out now. I'm like, Jesus, guys, like just now? Like,
yep,
just
that was
now
me. You thought, I'm one like, of those guys.
Like that's when you thought they were out. Like, dude, they've been out a long time. And that was verified when, on the selection show, Marquette was not even among the last four out. So not only were they out, they were way out. At least five out, maybe eight out, because they were a two seed in the NIT. So, I'm not trying to be a dick about it, but, I mean, I've been saying basically for a few months that 9-9 was not going to be enough. It wasn't enough. It wasn't close to enough. They needed another good win somewhere, or they needed to not lose to DePaul. Marquette simply didn't do enough to make the tournament. And, yeah, one thing you're definitely not going to hear from me, Phil, is Marquette was screwed. Marquette was not screwed by anyone but themselves.
Right.
They just didn't do enough. I've just never thought that going 9-9 with their non-conference resume was enough to impress the committee and say, wow, you guys did a really good job this year. You should be in the tournament. I look at Marquette this year and I just see average, and average doesn't get the tournament. So I headed into the selection show thinking, yeah, they're almost certainly out. Please stun me and surprise me. And I was not stunned, nor was I surprised.
Yeah, I will say this. You mentioned that they were probably way out. I mean, so here's the thing I struggle with. I was on the optimistic side. I admit I was totally wrong. And
you on the optimistic side? Come on.
I know. Shocking. Here's the thing I struggle with. Let's pretend for the sake of the discussion that they were eight spots out, right?
Okay.
Does beating DePaul and finishing with a 10-8 record, does that move them up eight spots?
Yeah, like that is one interesting thing. Like, if you want to really nitpick, and yeah, like there were certain teams that if they got in over Marquette, I was going to be bitter, and Syracuse, quite frankly, was one of them. So I was a little – I'm always pissed to see Syracuse in the tournament.
100%.
And the fact that they admitted, Notre Dame was in. Notre Dame was the team that got knocked out by Davidson. That made me a little bitter as well, because Notre Dame got way too much credit for having players injured, I thought. I mean, they still lost to Ball State at home
yep.
with all of their best players. So I thought Notre Dame got way too much credit, but Notre Dame didn't get anyway, so that's kind of a moot point. So yeah, if you want to nitpick, yeah, there were maybe some teams that were ahead of Marquette that you could say, eh, they probably shouldn't have been. But the fact is, Marquette was pretty comfortably out. But back to your point about, would the DePaul game have made a difference? You know, maybe not. But I think I guess that would be one question I would have for the committee chair, and it's just a weird hypothetical. But let's say Marquette did not have that one bad quadrant three loss, and did that like really knock them down several spots? And who knows? Maybe it did. Maybe it did knock them down significantly, and it's the whole lasting impression things. I don't know how much that matters. Maybe if they were watching the Big East tournament and they saw them barely get by DePaul and they just looked like they didn't belong on the same floor as Villanova. I don't know if that had a difference. It probably shouldn't make a difference, but I don't know if that mattered or not. But yeah, I am curious that, because like while I did say many times that 9-9 would be enough, I thought 10-8 was, especially if you get one win in the Big East tournament.
Because your magic number was 11, right?
It was always 11. That's what I like. Basically, since the non-conference schedule, I said let's get 11 wins, some combination of regular season and postseason. So if you get 10 in the regular season and grab one Big East tournament game, I would have felt great about Marquette being in the tournament. And you know, granted, now if they had beaten DePaul, they may have been the 3 seed,
right?
So they wouldn't have had that 7-10 game early on to get an easy win. So, but again, maybe they could have beaten whoever the 6 seed would have been in that scenario. Would have been Providence, I guess, or Creighton again. But, I'm not sure that beating DePaul alone would have had Marquette in the tournament, but there are some moving parts there. So I guess it's just something we'll wonder. But the bottom line is Marquette did have some other regrets along the season, most notably losing to Georgia at home.
Yep.
Losing to St. John's probably was not ideal, even though St. John's was the hottest team in the country at the time. And then you let one slip away against Providence on National Marquette Day. So there are probably there's obviously one big regret, but maybe one or two others that when you look at why is Marquette not in the tournament, you point to that. I certainly would not point to the committee screwed us or bubble team screwed us or bid stealers screwed us. Marquette just kind of screwed themselves if you're asking why they're not in the tournament.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like I was, you know, being on the optimistic side, I think you could make a case with the numbers, and especially in this year when they've kind of rejiggered how they were gonna do the selection with taking in KenPom into a higher account and doing this quadrant stuff, right? When you didn't quite know what the committee was going to judge on, so you could talk yourself into, you know, anything, especially with as tight as that bubble was. And the other thing to keep in mind is, you know, yeah, it sucks that we're not in the NCAA tournament, but at the same time, it's a very young team. And what really bit us in terms of not getting in was how competitive the rest of college basketball was this season. I mean, Marquette's record and rankings this season were better than any team that got it, or, you know, were better than any, or I'm trying to think how to say it. Basically, they were good enough to get you into every other tournament in the last 10 years.
Yeah, some people have made that point, that Marquette's current resume is good enough most years, but we're not trying to get in other
right.
years. We're trying to get in this year.
Again, it is what it is, right? And I'm not making excuses like, oh, this season was really good and we got screwed. But, I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to get that depressed about it. I mean, there were a few smattering of Wojo's seat is on fire hot takes that are completely wrong. But, you know, it's not a depressing result. I guess it's probably to be expected once we kind of got into that skid that resulted in, you know, losing to St. John's and eventually losing to DePaul.
Yeah, it's just a bummer because, you know, Marquette finally made the tournament last year, so they, hey, step forward, right? Made a step forward, got in the tournament. So you would hope to take another step forward this year, and it's kind of a stuck in neutral kind of thing. And, you know, the whole debate on Wojo's future is like, well, you know, it seems like Marquette keeps hitting the reset button and is young and they're young again, and then they lose some guys, but they're young again. Hopefully that goes away next year, and Marquette will be plenty experienced. But yeah, the build is going a little slower than most of us would prefer, and yeah, I'm a little tired of being 6th or 7th in the Big East, and like not even in the national discussion whatsoever as far as being ranked or being a tournament team. But hopefully there is a significant step forward next year, and there's plenty of reasons to believe that there will be, considering all the guys Marquette is assumed to be bringing back for next year's squad, only losing Rousey from this year's team, you would presume. But yeah, the build is going a little slower, and I understand some people are getting a little impatient, they're not very impressed, and yeah, like you want to see a team hire a coach, and then boom, 2 or 3 years in, all of a sudden you've got, you know, a top 25 team, but it just hasn't built that way, and it's taken a little longer. But next year has got to be a time when there's got to be some movement upward, right? Because
right.
I think the excuse of being young and the excuse of there's some good teams in the Big East only lasts so long. I mean, if you're saying, well, there's a lot of good teams that we play, and you say that like every year for 5 or 6 years, you start to say, well, maybe this isn't just a brief thing of teams being better than you. Maybe it's kind of a trend.
Or right? Maybe like, it's that Big East is good basketball, right? Like you're in by the adjusted rankings this year, the Big East was the second best conference in the country. And I suspect next year the Big East generally will be a little more down, just in terms of kind of the roster turnover that's going to go on after this season. So maybe the Big East falls to third or fourth in the rankings next season. We'll see. But at some point you have to compete in the league you're in, right? You can't just say, well, I'm waiting for the other teams to not be good so I can be good. That's not how basketball really works.
I know. Like, I know the Big East is a tough league, but Marquette spends more on college basketball than what all but like 5 teams in all of the nation.
Yeah.
And so if you're a team that spends that much money, you don't pay that to finish 7th or 8th in your own league. So, you know, granted the administration is being patient and that seems to like Wojo, but eventually at some point, like, well, we're spending top dollar on this program. We should be better.
Right.
We should be in the tournament at least. And
well,
hopefully that's what's
gonna
happen
next year. Not to sound like a broken record, but we've said it consistently this season. Next season is the season, right? Like we're not. This isn't one of those when we get into next season, we're going to say, oh, well, just kidding. This season isn't the season. Next season is. Like, I will go on record right now. I unless something comes up over the summer or there's mass defections on the roster, which is a whole other discussion, and I'm not absolving them. But unless there's something catastrophic that happens, my expectations for this team next year are top 3 Big East finish and a top 4 seed in the NCAA tournament. Like, I just think that's the expectations we should set.
Yeah, top 4 is high in the tournament, but it's not ridiculous as far as like something, because like if Marquette like is on the bubble again and just barely gets in, wouldn't you say like, man, we're still kind of stuck in neutral,
right?
Like we're just like, if this is as good as it gets, is this where we're comfortable being as a program, or do we want to really move forward? But
I'm not saying I would like call for Wojo's head if we ended up as a 5th seed. But you got to set a goal somewhere, right?
That's fine to set a goal that high. And who knows? We'll see when all the rosters shake out over the next few months where Marquette is actually picked in preseason polls and everything next year. But yeah, like you want to see some kind of movement upward and say, all right, well, now we're actually competitive and we're in the national conversation. And Selection Sunday is not about any kind of drama as far as whether we get in. It's going to be a drama as far as where we're going to be seated, who we're going to be matched up against, and if we're going to have a chance to get to the Sweet 16 or go to a Final Four. So that's the kind of drama you want on Selection Sunday, not biting your nails over the Atlantic 10 championship game wondering if it's going to mean we're going to have a prayer to get in or not. I mean,
if this is how the rest of the country lives their life most of the time, I'm not here for it. I don't want it. Like, we need to get back to the point where we're just
you don't want to be
tournament.
In a position. You just don't want to be in a position like Marquette was this year, where you need other teams to lose so you can get into tournaments. Like, you want to be in a position where you control your own destiny and you win yourself enough games that, yeah, we're gonna do this ourselves and get in the tournament and hope everyone else can see if anyone else can keep up with us and try to take this spot from us. Now, I will say one thing I'm interested in next year, Phil, is scheduling, because I think Marquette did a pretty good job scheduling this year.
Yep.
You know, because their schedule, while they didn't get any big wins in the non-conference, I mean, Wisconsin was a nice win, I guess, but Wisconsin turned out to be not very good this year. But my point is they scheduled well enough to make the rest of their resume worthy of tournament consideration, whereas maybe in the first couple years under Wojo, when they're still trying to figure this thing out, you know, they needed to basically go get 12 wins in the Big East to be relevant because their non-conference schedule was so bad. But the non-conference schedule was good this year. I'll be interested to see what is added next year to the Big East, to Marquette's non-conference schedule, because that, they have that the thing in New York with Kansas, Louisville, and Tennessee, so they'll play two of those teams. Hopefully another Gavitt game, hopefully against a top-tier Big Ten team. It would be great if you get, like, Michigan or Michigan State there. And then, like, the thing is, the Georgia home-and-home, that's over with. So you probably need some kind of home-and-home with somebody to replace that. I have no idea who that could possibly be. I'm sure.
I'd love to see somebody out west, right? Like a Pac-12
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the athletic department is working on it and trying to find somebody who's willing to do a home-and-home with Marquette. But, like, over the next 2 years under Wojo, as you and I have been saying, Phil, the 2018-19 season is the team you've been building towards, so it's probably not a mystery that, you know, Wojo knows next year's team should be good, should be competitive, so he shouldn't be afraid to challenge them. So if that means you got to go out west and play, I don't know, Gonzaga, for example, right? Go ahead, right. Do that.
Yeah.
Challenge yourselves. Play somebody like that. Like, you know, everyone's ripping St. Mary's. Like, the St. Mary's was left out because they don't play anybody. Maybe reach out to St. Mary's. Say, hey, do you want to challenge yourself? Why don't you come to Milwaukee? Like, let's do a home-and-home and, like, see if you can get that done. So do something like that and play somebody in the non-conference schedule that is going to benefit you, especially if you get that win, especially if it's on the road, because you should have a team experienced enough to handle it over the next 2 years. So I would anticipate maybe even in the next month or so, 6 weeks, the Marquette announcing a home-and-home with a recognizable program.
Well, I this is a curious thing, and maybe some point I'll ask Mike Broeker or somebody on Twitter, but like with the Gavitt games, do they know who the opponent is in advance of making
the schedule? I think those things aren't announced till like kind of late, aren't they? Like, yeah. I want to say July,
well, I know when
maybe
they're announced, but I don't know when they're right? Because like if you get Rutgers in the Gavitt games, you're going to schedule them potentially differently than if you're getting Michigan State.
Yeah, okay, I see what you're saying. But I think they generally try to pair it up like – well, I guess maybe not. I was going to say they shouldn't maybe pair it up like the best teams play the best teams and the bottom teams play the bottom teams, but maybe that's not accurate. But yeah, I get what you're saying. Like, you would like to get some kind of indication to, hey, are we getting like a really good Big Ten team, or are we getting like Rutgers?
Right. Right. I mean, because the whole point is, like, the trick to the non-conference is don't schedule any 300-plus teams if you can avoid it.
Right.
You know, so schedule a lot of 200s to 300s and have at least – you got to have one, you know, neutral exception tournament where you'll hopefully play at least a couple of decent teams. But you want to have at least three or four games on the schedule that are probably top 100 RPI games, if not top 50.
This year Marquette had Purdue as a Gavitt game, then they had Georgia, then they had Vermont.
Right.
And those are all three nice games. Like, you know, Georgia maybe turned out to be not as good as you hoped, but then you go out and freaking lose it anyway. But still, those are like – I mean, those are decent additions to the schedule.
Yes, exactly. So you got to – but that's my point. If we don't know what the Gavitt opponent is, you know, do you go out and schedule a Gonzaga, you know, if you're also going to end up with a Michigan State? Because there's a delicate balance there. Like, you want to go win –
Your brains beat in either, right? Like, you don't want to do like what, like, say Kansas does, where they play Kentucky, Duke, and Michigan State, like, in the preseason. Like, whoa, enough.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, we get it.
I mean, we're good, but we're not that good.
Exactly. So,
you know, so the scheduling will again be kind of the balance, right? Because that's the scheduling was. I think exactly right this season to get.
Yeah, I think it was fair this year. Like, it was challenging, but it wasn't gonna like they weren't gonna get their brains beat in. They like I said, they blew the home game at Georgia. That's a game you should have won. And then, you know, they went on the road to Wisconsin, and then they got that win. That was a nice W. So yeah, I think this year's schedule was just right for this team, and I hope they make a similar adjustment with next year's team. like I said, if the degree of difficulty goes up just a little bit, I think that's fine because you're expecting your team to be a little bit better.
Right. Well, I think the degree going up next year is fine. And if they play a little more on the road in the non-conference, that's fine too, because the only player on the roster next year, pending a grad transfer or another true freshman coming in, every single player on the roster, with the exception of Brendan Bailey, will have road game experience. Joey Hauser hasn't played in a game, but he's at least got, he's got the experience of going on the road, prepping for games, getting into that habit. I mean, that's a lot of the intangibles of playing road games, especially early in the season. So I think this team should fear no one and not be afraid to go on the road come next season. So that'll be interesting. But next season is next season.
Yeah, so still deal about this season for now, but
we're trying to get beyond it.
Yeah, like I think we're kind of avoiding talking about the NIT as our buddy Ruby Q said, he called it the Arby's Invitational, which I think is the perfect like nickname for the NIT. Arby's should totally sponsor the NIT. I think it would be just brilliant marketing, really. But before we get to that, do you have any other thoughts on the NCAA selections as far as Marquette being left out?
No, I don't think so. Like I said, I've come to accept what was always our fate. Marquette's just got to play better.
Yeah, one thing I will add about that, one thing, obviously the biggest complaint about Marquette all year has been the defense. I was curious, I looked. Guess how many teams in the NCAA tournament, Phil, including all the automatic bids, have defenses ranked worse than Marquette's 176 on KenPom?
I'm going to go with zero, Bob.
It's four.
Oh, okay.
So that would be 15th seeded Iona and 16 seeds NC Central, LIU Brooklyn, and Texas Southern.
Okay, so we need to go to the MEAC and the MWC.
Exactly.
That's what I'm hearing?
The worst at-large defense, worst defense among at-large teams was Arizona State at 124, so a good 52 points higher than Marquette's.
And Arizona State is one of the teams that was arguably a mistake in adding to the tournament.
Arizona State was certainly they were a quintessential bubble team. I mean, they just barely got in, and they're going to be playing in Dayton this week. So if you need any more evidence that the defense has got to get better if Marquette wants to be a tournament team, there you have it. Almost every team, including some of the 16 and 15 seeds, have better defenses per KenPom than Marquette. Just can't go anywhere you just can't go anywhere. So hopefully this defense improves a lot next year with some of the additions that are coming in, and we'll see if anyone else is added as far as
forget that Wojo won't have the option of playing two sub-6-foot guards next season, unless he goes out and gets another one in free agency.
Yeah, like, if he does add another guard, hopefully it's not a little guy. So that Ashton Hagen's kid who might reclassify, the kid from Georgia, I mean, he's 6'4", and apparently a very good defender on the high school level if he comes to Marquette. And the thing is, hey, with games at the Owl, maybe you can get him on campus this week. I don't know. Can you do official visits during an NIT? Is that a thing, or is that forbidden? I'm not sure about that.
March might be a quiet period.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that one. But hopefully we can get him on campus for a visit before he decides. Looks like Georgia let go of their coach, so the odds of him recommitting to Georgia probably go down with that. But apparently, I was going to say Rick Pitino's interested in Georgia, but it wasn't Pitino. It was Thad Matta. But Pitino might go to Ole Miss, so hold your breath there.
Boy, Ole Miss is just doubling down on NCAA infractions, huh?
Yeah, like they just don't care. But I digress. So, hey, Phil, why don't we talk about the NIT a little bit?
Yeah, let's talk about a team whose offense is worse than Marquette's defense.
Exactly. So Marquette is in the NIT, as you know. They're going to be playing Harvard. Marquette is a 2-seed. They're in the same region as Notre Dame, so potential, if Marquette can get 2 games, they would play Notre Dame for a chance to go to Madison Square Garden. But first things first, you got to beat Harvard. Hey, another former Wojo assistant, Tommy Amaker, or former Duke assistant, Tommy Amaker, going up against Wojo. So two former Duke assistants going head-to-head. Games are going to be played at the Al McGuire Center, which is I guess kind of a good idea. We kind of thought maybe they would reopen the Bradley Center for Marquette, but I guess they're not going to do that. And the way the more I thought about it, Phil, because I guess the students are on spring break this week.
Yep.
So I don't know how many fans you could realistically get to the Bradley Center for an NIT game against Harvard. I'm guessing probably not 18,000.
I would
probably
not think
not
so.
10,000.
I remember the in 2005 the Western Michigan game was, shall we say, poorly attended.
Yeah, look. I know fans love their team, but still, it's an NIT game, and you get the NCAA the next day, and it's middle of the week. So, and with the students out of town too, if that's the case, if they're on spring break, wouldn't count on too many fans. And so, let's say optimistically, you got 5,000 fans to the Bradley Center. 5,000 fans at the Bradley Center looks sad, but I guess with Al McGuire Center holds about 3,700.
Yep, something like that.
So yeah, so let's say you get 3,500 fans at the Al McGuire Center is awesome. It's going to be loud in there. It'll be packed. It'll be a great atmosphere as opposed to 3,500 fans at the Bradley Center, which would look like a JV high school game as far as atmosphere-wise. Just wouldn't really do anything. It'd be kind of sad to watch. So I guess maybe playing at the Al, all things considered, might be kind of fun.
I'm actually really looking – obviously, I would much rather be in the NCAA, but – I'm actually looking forward to it. I think it'll be a fun atmosphere. I think we can get it to a sellout.
Yeah, it's only 3,700, and I get even if the students are on spring break, I'm sure there are still plenty of students on campus.
Right. And it's a 6 p.m. Wednesday game, so it's not you can stay downtown and go to the game after work or and you're getting home at a reasonable hour
exactly.
Listen to me sounding like an old man, but yeah, I mean, I'm taking no red for Owen to the game. It's perfect for us. He'll love it sitting that close. It's a great game to go take the kids to, a cool atmosphere, and the Owl's a fun place to hang out. So the only downside is no beer sales. But you'll just have to get excited with your own natural spirit as opposed to liquid.
Do your own pre-gaming.
Yeah.
And plus the game will be over early enough that you could do some post-gaming as well, if that's your thing.
If you're into such a thing, on a Wednesday night.
Yeah. And now the other things to keep in mind with the NIT is, and this is actually one of the few really great things the NCAA does, is they experiment with rules in the NIT and see if they like it and before they bring it into all of college basketball. There's some new rules in the NIT, so they're experimental rules that could become a full-time thing in men's college basketball, most notably quarters. So they'll play 4 10-minute quarters instead of 2 20-minute halves. Big plus there, of course, is with fouls. So instead of there is no one and one now. You just start shooting 2 free throws with the 5th foul in each quarter, and then it resets. So fewer free throws, always a good thing. I think so. It should.
So our free throw defense should get better.
Yes, exactly. So it should be a little more watchable. The game may move along a little quicker because you're not stopping down and shooting as many free throws. So I think that's a good thing. The 3-point line is extended a little bit to the FIBA regulation of 22 feet and almost 2 inches. So I think an extended 3-point line is probably just fine with us.
Yeah.
I think Rousey shoots from like 25 plus anyway. So
could we extend it to like Michigan and see if Rousey?
Right, yeah, let's
still
just extend it to 30. I think that would be fine for Marquette. So,
how much is going to be a stupid question. How much shorter is the FIBA line than the NBA line?
So you asked me questions on the spot, but I think it's a little shorter. Hold on.
Right.
But
it's not an NBA 3, right?
I'm sorry. You just caught me off guard there, but the NBA 3-point line is 22 feet. Oh, all right, so it is 23 feet. So 23 feet 9 inches. So, yeah, it's almost a foot and a half shorter than the 3-point line.
So the FIBA line's a foot and a half shorter than the NBA.
Yeah, the FIBA line is a foot and a half shorter.
So it's basically halfway between college and the NBA.
Yeah, so NBA is 23 feet 9 inches. FIBA is 22 feet 1 1/4.
Now here's the question. So, well, and you're going to get to a couple other rules, but basically some of the rule changes require new lines to be put on the court. How quickly? I mean, Marquette just found out tonight, and they play on Wednesday. Are they going to like painter's tape or masking tape these lines onto the court? How are they going to do that so fast?
I guess that is the school's problem. I don't know.
That may be also why we're not playing at the Bradley Center. We gotta paint the court.
Does the NIT have its own court that it delivers?
Well, that's a good question. Well, no, I bet you you play on your own home court, but there's going to be like an NIT logo on it, which you've also got to put that on. So,
yeah. So I guess the school's got to get to work Monday mornings. All right, guys.
We gotta get that guy from the Big Ten championship game.
He'd get that done before we finish this podcast.
we flew him in. He might be done already.
Yeah, good for him. Good for him. You mentioned there are a couple other rules. I guess the only one of note was the lane is wider. Instead of 12 feet, it's going to be 16 feet. So big men have to stay out of the paint. That may actually work in Marquette's advantage too, because you know when Rousey and Howard drive to the paint, they generally have some trouble in there with the big guys. So if the big guys have to play a little further away from the basket, maybe a few more layups.
Yeah, I would think so. And you know, I think it probably helps Hauser a little bit, gets him a little more room. It'll be interesting.
So yeah, I'm excited to see the experimental rules in place and. Who knows? Maybe some of these rules may benefit Marquette. Maybe not, but I guess we're going to learn. So let's talk about the opponent, Phil, Harvard. Very good program. They've been in the NCAA tournament quite a few times under Tommy Amaker.
Don't you mean the Wisconsin of Harvard or Wisconsin of Massachusetts?
No, I don't mean that at all.
Okay, I'm just checking because I've heard Wisconsin's the Harvard of the Midwest.
Yeah, no, it isn't.
It really isn't. No, it's not. No, did they make the tournament?
They did not.
Oh.
They did not. So, I mean, that is really – I mean, it doesn't really drown my sorrows too much, but it doesn't hurt.
Right. I'm not sad about it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll get over it. For what it's worth on KenPom, Marquette is an 11-point favorite over Harvard. So, Harvard is 144 on KenPom. They're a pretty good defensive team, actually. They are rated in the top 100 in KenPom on team defense, 64. Offense, not so much, 243. So kind of polar opposite from Marquette. Yeah. Marquette, obviously an elite offense, 13 in the country. Poorest defense, 176. So you presume Harvard's going to want to slow this thing down, grind it out, get a low-scoring game. Marquette's going to run. Harvard plays a terribly slow tempo, 307 in tempo. So they are really going to want to slow it down. Obviously, Marquette likes to run. Harvard does tend to kick it around. They do tend to turn the ball over a lot, so this probably contributes to their poor offensive numbers. The bottom line is this is a team Marquette should beat, even though it is a good Ivy League program that is pretty well coached and given the limitations of how many athletes they can get into the Ivy League and to play for Harvard. But, as pessimistic as I am about this team sometimes, Phil, they do tend to beat teams worse than them, save DePaul. But I think they... You know, this is a game you should expect to win, and I would expect Marquette to win a couple games in this thing before you run into a Notre Dame team in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, I mean, this should be a game, especially playing at home, that they should win walking away from Harvard. I mean, no disrespect to Harvard, but they're not good. But
they're fine by Ivy League standards, but if you want to compare them to the Big East teams, I mean, they're just not. They're just not, yeah.
Well, I mean, I would make the argument, and I think KenPom could make the argument for me very well, that Harvard would be the 11th best team in the Big East. So if we can beat most of the teams in the Big East, then I think we should be able to handle Harvard.
Yeah, we do have a common opponent, by the way. They did play Vermont. They lost to them at home by 6, and Marquette, of course, beat Vermont by 10.
Yep. So basically Harvard, if you look at their at least according to KenPom, if you look at their schedule, basically they lost every game that they were the lower ranked opponent. So they didn't beat anyone that they weren't supposed to. So I wouldn't expect that trend to change. We can't look past them. Who knows? I mean, the last time Marquette, the aforementioned Western Michigan game was did not go well for Marquette. But unless something happens to both Howard and Rousey, I don't expect Marcus Jackson to be playing point forward for us. So, yeah, but like you said, I think, you know, and then you got Oregon Rider. Whoever wins that is Marquette's next appointment. I think Marquette has a chance to like get to the point where they're facing a Notre Dame. I mean, that's kind of what you want, right? You want them to have practices and play games and have, you know, play in a tournament where you have win and go home kind of mentality. I think that's what this team needs to get them seasoned for next year, which is a all or nothing year.
Exactly. You know, as much as we kind of groan at the "this is a young team" stuff, but you know, there is some truth to it. There is some youth on this team, and you want to give them some March experience. And you know, it is a golden opportunity to play in the NIT if you're not good enough to play in the NCAA. And you know, winning the NIT could actually be a nice indication of that you're going to take a step forward the next year. TCU won the NIT last year, and they took a big leap forward this year. They made the NCAA tournament. You know, they lost their point guard, and I think they would have done much better in the Big 12 had they not, but they're still comfortably in the NCAA field and looking like they're going to be a nice program under Jamie Dixon. So I think if you, like, yeah, let's ideally you would love to win the NIT, and maybe you get people really talking about you and putting you in preseason polls and giving you some preseason respect next year. So, yeah, there's a lot of value for a young team like Marquette to play in the NIT, get some, you know, like you said, win or go home experience with some of these young guys that you're going to have to depend on next year who are going to be your veteran leaders over the next 2 years as you hope to really take a leap forward with this program.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's just go out and get some experience and win some games. And people can crap on the NIT all they want. And I think the Arby's Invitational is a perfect description. And I get that it's not the tournament. But you know what? I kind of enjoy watching this team as much as they give me a heart attack from time to time. It'll be fun to see Rousey play a couple of games with essentially a wide open court that he can just rain fire from wherever he wants. So I think there's a lot to like. Sure, nobody should settle for this, but I mean, and maybe it's me being optimistic again, but this is going to be a fun little tournament that hopefully Marquette can do some damage and turn some heads and just at the end of the day be prepared for next season.
Yeah, once you get past the disappointment of not being in the tournament, it's like, all right, well, let's try to salvage something and do something good. And, you know, maybe you can get a few nice wins here. And it would be awesome to play Notre Dame. They still have to – I mean, they get Hampton, and then they get the winner of Temple Penn State. So we'll see how they do there. But, I think it would be awesome to play Notre Dame. You used to talk about potential home-and-home opponents if you're looking to add some beef – to the schedule over the next 2 years. I think a lot of people would love to see Notre Dame on a home and home with Marquette. I think I've said before, I would love to have Notre Dame and Wisconsin on a home and home every year, just alternating who's the home. So on the years you go to Madison, you get Notre Dame at home. And then in the years you go to South Bend, you get Wisconsin and Milwaukee. So, I mean, I think, yeah, they're an old rival. It's always fun to play Notre Dame. So I would certainly hope that's going to happen. And, yeah, that game would be in South Bend if it does happen. So it'd be cool to have Notre Dame come to Milwaukee, but that's not going to happen. So unless there's some kind of conflict with Notre Dame's arena, I don't know what that would be, but that they do move the thing around if there are any kind of scheduling conflicts. But yes, who knows what's going to happen with Oregon Rider. Oregon, a decent team out of the Pac-12, but a Pac-12 that's probably, if we're being honest, six out of the Power Six leagues this year. So I would still think, even if, especially you're getting that team at home, if they get past Ryder, who Ryder had a surprisingly high RPI this year, actually. They actually weren't a bad team. But so if Oregon gets past them, that might be an interesting game. You get them in Milwaukee. And, yeah, I think Marquette can get a couple wins here. Like, they're so far away from beating the great teams, like, Villanova or Xavier or, Purdue, the top teams they play. But, for some of these teams in the NIT, Marquette can hang with all these teams.
Absolutely, yeah. There's no reason
they can beat any one of them,
right? There's no reason to say that Marquette could win the whole thing, it's fun to be snide about it, but I mean that's a little exciting. I wouldn't hang a banner, but I mean it's a little exciting, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like you used to hang NIT banners when it meant something, right? Like back in in 1970, that was a big deal, right? Al passed on going to the NCAAs, they went out and won the NIT. That was cool, but. Hanging an NIT banner would be kind of like hanging a, Great Alaskan Shootout.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing.
So, I mean, it'd be nice to win, and it'd be a nice step forward for this young team, but you're not going to christen the new arena next year with a NIT banner.
And if they do, we might have to have a discussion with certain members of the athletic department.
That's not what you want opening night, right? We're not going to do that.
I'm not all about booing your own home your own team, but if they hang that banner, I will fully endorse booing Marquette.
Yeah, but I think we're getting way ahead of ourselves. We may lose to Harvard. You know, the one last point I wanted to make about the NIT is like the thing that's hard to account for, and I hope this isn't the case with Marquette, but it's worth bringing up is the thing you can't account for, the do they care about being there thing, right? Like similar to like college football bowl games, the teams that don't go to the playoff, right? Teams that don't get to the NCAA tournament, do they even care about the NIT, or are they just like, dude, the season's over, let's just go home? And, like, then they go out and get beat. Like, you know, when Kentucky lost to, who was it, Hampton? I think it was Hampton a few years ago. Like, Kentucky got into the NIT, and then they went out and lost to Hampton or whoever that team was that beat them. Yeah. Or it was Robert Morris. That's who it was.
Yeah, it was Robert Morris.
So, like, that was just the case. Like, that team was done, and they had no interest in playing in the NIT, even though they were a top seed. I hope that's not the case for Marquette, but that's always something to be aware of as far as, you know, you're looking at upsets in the NIT and whether they're going to, like, that would be a concern for me with Notre Dame, right? Like, they got seniors on that team that were probably really disappointed that they didn't go to the NCAA tournament and thought they, especially when they get the news that they were the last team out, thanks to Davidson. So that's something to watch out for is the motivation factor is, like, do the players care and do they want to win this thing? And with Marquette's case, I would hope they would be excited to play a few more games.
Well, I mean, based on Rousey's reaction in the Big East tournament when he came out of the game against Villanova and was on the bench, you know, essentially in tears, you would think he wants to play a little bit longer because, I mean, let's be honest, once he's done at Marquette, I mean, maybe he can go make some cash somewhere else in the globe, but it's not going to be the same thing. He's going to be in some weird – he may be playing with whichever one of the Ball brothers is still in Lithuania.
Well, I think they're both still there, but Rousey's too good for that league. he can do better. Hey, you know what? He could face his former teammates possibly in the championship game. UNC Asheville's on the other side of the bracket.
Oh, that would be kind of fun.
There was actually some of the speculation that that would be a 1-8 matchup or a 2-7 matchup as Marquette against UNC Asheville. But I think they try to pair him up a little more regionally, but I say that. But UNC Asheville's playing USC, so that's not regional at all. But, hey. That if UNC Asheville can upset USC and three other teams, you can have a reunion that way in Madison Square Garden. So we can root for that. And then, you know, Marquette gets to Madison Square Garden where all of a sudden they just can't shoot anymore.
Absolutely. That would be nice. Yeah, maybe they'll exhaust themselves. Because it is. I mean, it's three games in like 6 days. It's no joke.
They want to get the thing over with pretty quickly, and then
right, they figure, and then, you know, there's still that watching, that's good enough.
You know, there's still that 3-on-3 thing. Have you heard about that?
Yes,
that they're doing at the Final Four. I don't know if Rousey would get picked for that, but if Villanova and Xavier both make the Final Four, well, Villanova doesn't have any seniors, but if Xavier makes the Final Four, or stunningly Seton Hall or somebody does, they may need a few extra seniors, so maybe Rousey could get picked for the Big East 3-on-3 team, which I think is going to be pretty loaded when they get to that thing.
Yeah.
Let's say you don't get Xavier because Xavier goes to the Final Four, which I hope they do, but you still got, like, basically Seton Hall's team by itself would be a good 3-on-3 team, but then you get Foster, you could get Seton Hall would have Delgado. If you blew it from Xavier and McCure from Xavier, if they don't make it,
and then you could name?
Martin from Butler.
Yeah, Martin from Butler, or 24 from Providence. Cartwright. Yeah, Cartwright.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, Xavier, and like you're gonna have four teams on it, or four guys on each team. So Big East's 3-on-3 team at the Final Four. I'm looking forward to that.
You know, one thing that's scary that you just said was, well, Villanova doesn't have any seniors, and yet they're the number one team in the country.
Yeah. Well, fortunately for the rest of the Big East, while they don't have any seniors, they have two guys that they're likely losing the NBA in Brunson and Bridges. That team is so freaking loaded. And, you know, you and I were talking about this before the pod, Phil. Based on where teams are seated from the Big East, really, if you're counting on some revenue shares from the NCAA tournament, you really need Nova and Xavier to go deep because everyone else is kind of boxed in where they're probably not getting out of the first weekend. You know, Creighton's an 8 seed. They're going to get UVA in the next round if they get past K-State. Seton Hall is an 8 seed. So if they get past NC State, they're getting Kansas, although Kansas could get tripped up, I suppose. But and then Providence is a 10 seed. If they can get past the Dwayne Wilson-less A&M Aggies, then they would get North Carolina. And then Butler's a 10 seed, so if they can get past Arkansas, they get Purdue. So Nova and Xavier are really the only two Big East teams that I'm thinking could even make it to the second weekend. So while it's great the Big East has six teams in, and I hope some of them can maybe pull an upset or two, I'm not really banking on anything other than the two big boys.
Yeah, you would really just have to count on like the committee overseeding the non-Big East teams, right? Like, I mean, the ACC and the SEC got some interesting seeding, I'll say that. I mean, it's a one game and you're out tournament, so it's really not reflective totally about the quality of the leagues. But you have to say that some of the seeding in the SEC and the ACC is interesting simply because you got teams that have, you know, losing conference records, A, getting in, and then B, getting some mid to high level seeding. That's like, where'd that come from? But I don't know. We'll see. It's like you said, though. I mean, the fact that both Xavier and Villanova are number one seeds, though, that from a money standpoint, which is we should be cheering for the Big East, if nothing else, for the money that it brings to the program for teams winning. That gives you, if it goes chalk, it gives you a 50-50 shot that that the Big East is going to at least get a team into the Final Four. And I guess I haven't looked at the bracket that closely. They're on opposite sides of the bracket, right?
Yes, Xavier and Villanova could potentially meet in the championship game if things go beautifully.
How kind of awesome would that be?
That would be amazing. So that certainly speaks to the quality of the league that they can get two number one seeds. It would have been nice to get someone else in that, you know, 4-5-6 range.
Yep.
I think that there maybe was some cannibalizing of the league late with teams like Creighton and Butler taking a few losses late in the season where they got knocked down to those 8-9-10 lines. So, but yeah, it's still great to have two number one seeds. And I the thing is, when you got number one seeds, it's really a real bummer if you don't get at least to the Elite Eight, right?
Right.
Like anything short of that is a big disappointment. And even though Nova won the national title a couple years ago, I would hate for them to go out in the second round to Virginia Tech or Alabama and have Jay Wright have to deal with that crap again. But I'm pretty confident that Villanova for sure, I would be very disappointed if they didn't get to the Elite Eight. And then looking at Xavier's bracket, now they have some tricky stuff there because first of all, they've got the wild card in Missouri, who they're getting Michael Porter Jr. back, who looked okay, if not, you know, he looked all right. He didn't look great in this.
I did not understand the hype on Michael Porter Jr., but
he's damn good. I saw him in high school. That guy has a Kevin Durant skill set. Like, he is really freaking good.
Well, I don't doubt that. I'm just confused by the whole, he's at 100%, and then he plays kind of okay, and then afterwards it's, oh, no, he's at 65%.
I played bad, so I was only six. Well, why'd you say you were at 100? Like, were you at 100 or were you at 65? Like,
right.
Like, what are you? So Xavier's got that kind of wild card in the next round, assuming they get past the 16 seed. So please God, don't that happen.
Oh God, not that one.
Yeah, so not like this. But so if Xavier gets past, assuming Xavier can get past the 16 seed, they potentially could have Missouri. And then in the Sweet 16, it's always tough. Like if they get Gonzaga, I mean, that's just such an experienced team with an experienced coach. Maybe Ohio State could have a little reunion with Chris Holtmann playing another Big East team again if he can get Ohio State to the Sweet 16. So Xavier, I think, has a tough road to get to the Elite Eight, but they could do it. Chris Mack is one heck of a coach, and he's done this quite a few times. He got to the Elite Eight last year when nobody thought he even should have gotten to the tournament. So I'm hoping Xavier and Nova both get at least to the Elite Eight, and then one of them gets to the Final Four. So if seeds hold, Nova would potentially have Purdue in the Elite Eight. Xavier would potentially have North Carolina or maybe Michigan. So, again, Xavier, I think, has a much tougher bracket if they're going to get to the Final Four. Nova, I think they actually have a manageable bracket. There's no team in that bracket that I say, oh, man, that's big trouble for Nova. I think they can beat.
I really don't like Buzz Williams looming out there for him, though.
Yeah, you never know. But the way Villanova played against Marquette, they could beat the Warriors.
Why didn't they save that?
I mean, my gosh, they were just hitting everything. So I am Villanova is absolutely the team I want to see win the national championship. My personal bias being from Kansas City, I'd love to see KU make a deep run, but I just don't trust that team to go that far. Who knows? They may not get past Seton Hall in the second round.
Azubuike's coming back, though, right? He's going
to
be available.
Azubuike is supposed to come back. He may be 100%. He may only be 65%. We'll see what they say, depending on how well he plays. But Seton Hall has enough inside that could give a team like Kansas trouble. So who knows? Maybe Seton Hall could pull an upset there in the second weekend. Scanning everyone else, Providence. I don't know if they can get past. I mean, I think they could beat A&M, but I don't know if they could get past Carolina. Carolina's pretty darn good. And then, Butler. I could see Butler maybe being a surprise Sweet 16 team. Because Purdue does not look as invincible as it looked in January. And, Butler could beat Arkansas. And, a two seed goes down every year before the Sweet 16. So I could see that. And, of course, if I would love any for two seed to go down early, it would, of course, be Cincinnati.
Of course. God, there's other than maybe Buzz Williams, there's no coach in the NCAA I dislike more than Mick Cronin.
Are you like me with Bob Huggins, that you've come around on him over the last 10 years or so? Like, I don't dislike him as much as I used to.
Oh, no, I don't know that I'd go as far as to say I'm a fan of his, but I'm certainly accepting of him. I kind of view him as he's the ultimate, like, drunk uncle.
Yeah, he's got Villanova could meet him in the Sweet 16 because they're paired up with Murray State, and then they get the winner of Marshall versus Marshall. That's Greg Marshall of Wichita State against Marshall University. So.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, West Virginia's entire offense is predicated on their 94 feet of hell kind of defense, and I think Villanova is the one team that is not going to get rattled by a press, and if West Virginia is not turning you over, they have no offense to speak of.
Yeah, West Virginia wears down too. They get tired. They've blown leads because they're just so wiped at the end of the game. So, I know you haven't taken a deep look at the bracket, Phil, but I'll just get you out of here with this before we wrap it up here. A knee jerk reaction: Final Four picks, four teams to go to San Antonio.
I think Nova goes for sure.
While you glance at the bracket, I'm going to give you mine. I agree with you. I'm taking Nova out of the East. I'm just knocking on wood. Nova's got to get out of that bracket. So as much as it pains me, I've got to go kind of chalk in the South. I'm going to take Virginia. I would definitely be excited to see Virginia play Arizona in the Sweet 16. Arizona potentially gets Kentucky in the second round. That's a game like – all the NBA scouts are going to be at that one, Arizona against Kentucky. That could be a great game.
Well, and so are all the bag droppers.
Yes, well, it's too late for them because the bags have been dropped, and now they're on the way to the NBA. But so I'm taking Arizona. Even though Virginia's not my favorite team to watch, I have come to respect Virginia and how tough they play, and they force teams to play their style. And I'm just not sure there's a team in that bracket, especially not the bottom half. If Virginia gets past Arizona, Kentucky, they're going to beat whoever comes out of the bottom half of that bracket. So I'm taking Virginia out of that region. I know I'm getting a little chalky here, but that's kind of the way I do. So in the Midwest, like I said before, I just don't trust Kansas to go super deep. I'm going to take Michigan State out of that region. Michigan State, Duke potentially in the Sweet 16 could be a great game if they both make it that far.
Yeah, go ahead.
Tough for me between Michigan State and Duke there. But I'm going to take Michigan State. So I'll take Michigan State out of that bracket. And then am I really going to pick North Carolina to go to a third straight Final Four?
Oh, man. Don't do it. Don't do it.
I don't know if I want to do that. All right, I'm going to say Michigan.
Okay. I was actually going to say Michigan out of that bracket.
All right, so that's my Final Four then. Even though I'm really pulling for Xavier, I'll say Virginia, Nova, Michigan State, Michigan, and I'll say Nova over Virginia for the championship.
Okay.
So that's my Final Four.
All right. We're going to agree on the top part. We're going to agree on the Vs, V for victory. So Virginia and Villanova. I will say Michigan out of the West. Out of the Midwest, I'm going to go a little bit of a deeper pull. I actually think the ultimate bag dropper, at least in the Milwaukee area, And
you are not going to take Bruce Pearl.
I am 100% going to take Bruce Pearl because I'm going to laugh heartily when the Final Four trip is invalidated when the FBI investigation concludes. I think Auburn goes out of the Midwest in the Final Four.
Sweet mercy.
It's going to happen.
So who's your championship game?
I think it's Virginia-Villanova. I mean, those two teams are by far and away the at least right now, are the two best teams I've seen playing in college basketball.
I would agree. And the best teams don't always win this thing, but if you're playing the odds and the best teams in it, Virginia is just, love them or hate them, so damn consistent. And Villanova, the way they played in Madison Square Garden this week, like I said, they could beat NBA teams the way they shot the ball. So,
well, and here's the question. In that Villanova-Virginia matchup, let's pretend that's a thing. Like,
okay.
If nothing else, I want to see that, right? Like, Villanova's offense is ridiculous, and Virginia's defense is probably the best in the country. I mean, it is statistically the best in the country, but, like, just strategically, it's the best.
It is number one. Yeah, it would be number one versus number one per KenPom. Villanova number one offense, Virginia number one defense, but go on.
I just want to see which one breaks. that is a matchup. I would, as a disinterested third party, I would just love to see how that works out.
You know, something that just occurred to me, they say, you know, teams with top 20 offenses and defenses in KenPom are pretty good bets in March.
Yeah.
I'm just looking very quickly, teams that are top 20 in both. I see two. Let me see.
Got to be, yep. Nova is
two.
One.
No, Virginia is Nova just barely not. They're 22 on defense.
So when it gets the others, Virginia's got to be the other one.
Actually, Virginia is not. Virginia is 21 on offense. So barely no.
Okay, so offense and defense.
And I'll give you a better hint. They're both top 10. And both of the two teams I'm looking at, they're both top 10 overall, offense and defense. Don't think too hard. Very,
yeah,
good
teams. Is one of them Purdue?
Purdue is not. Purdue is 2 on offense, 28 on defense.
Oof. North Carolina?
Close, though. Again, very
Michigan
close.
State?
Four. Michigan State is correct. 9 on both offense and defense.
Interesting. And then the other.
And honestly, I am very surprised at the other answer, how high their defense is ranked, because it seems like people are ripping their defense all the time. But
Duke?
Per KenPom, it's the – yep, Duke. 7th ranked defense in the country per KenPom.
Wow. Well, I guess that changed when they switched the 2-3 zone. Wow.
Yeah. How about that?
Who saw that coming?
Yeah. Coach K, how about that? All right, so those are our final four picks. And again, kind of went a little national there at the end. But we're hoping for Marquette to make a nice run in the NIT. Bummed they didn't get in, but certainly not surprised. But we hope this has been a decent therapy session for you. I know we're all bummed to be out, but hopefully most of you were not terribly surprised that Marquette was out, because I think most of us felt it coming. I think Jerry Palm was like the last national person to say Marquette had a chance to be in, and he finally gave up on that like middle of the afternoon on Sunday. Like, all right, if Jerry Palm says we're out, we're definitely out. But
yeah. The best part of the Jerry Palm thing was afterwards people were praising him for having Syracuse in, and I'm like, what are you talking about? He had Marquette in just today. Like, a blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while. Calm down.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look at – I have to look at the – I haven't looked at the grades as far as who did the best brackets, but I don't know. But
as long as it's not Joe Lunardi.
You know, unpopular opinion, it's very, you know, fashionable to crap on Joe Lunardi. He actually does a pretty good job. Like, he normally gets, like, all but, like, two teams in. Like, and the one team he always misses every year is Syracuse. So I'm actually with him on that. Like, he always says Syracuse is out, and Syracuse always gets in. So – I actually like Lunardi. I know it's very good just because he's the most popular guy. It's very fashionable to say, oh, he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. Somebody has to do this thing, and he kind of started the whole bracketology thing and made it mainstream anyway. So I get off Joe Lunardi's back a little bit. I don't dislike Lunardi.
I get it, but I kind of – Lunardi, he's kind of like Chris Berman. There was a time when I really liked Chris Berman, and then his shtick and his kind of approach got old, or, you know – 12-year-old me kind of got a kick out of Dickie V. 37-year-old me changes the channel as soon as I realize that he's the one calling the game. I get what you're saying about Lenardi. I just think some of the venom, that's way, way overdone, but some of the, like,
mocking
he had of the Big East and generally and kind of, and again, just because I'm paranoid doesn't mean people aren't out to get me, but, you know, just seemingly the way he was kind of pumping up conferences that conveniently had contracts with ESPN, it just kind of sat the wrong way with me.
Just at a quick glance, for what it's worth, I think Lunardi missed two teams. He had USC and St. Mary's in, and he had Arizona State and Syracuse out. Those are the two he missed.
You know, and it'd be interesting to see, like, how his bracket evolved over the last couple of weeks. Because I'd like to see, like, his final bracket that counts in the how accurate it was versus, like, the brackets, like, 3 days ago. Because I don't know. I just have a sneaking suspicion he kind of tweaked it at the end to get close to what it was. But who knows?
Yeah, again, well, it's not like he had the answers. So, well, but that's enough critiquing Joe Lunardi and bracketologists everywhere. It's a silly science, but it's a silly science that we're addicted to. And now we can let it go.
Can we spend some time about the selection show and how awful it was? Like, that was really bad, right?
All right. So, yeah, let's get out of here with that. I was open to the idea of, like, revealing all the teams at the beginning. And just, like, to, like, save the drama of, like, 45 minutes in and there's still one bracket and we're still waiting. Like, from that perspective, like, you know, maybe I'll like that. But obviously the first thing was the audio guy was just asleep at the wheel tonight on TBS.
So he's like, got it. That person has to be fired, like, right now.
Yeah, like, I don't know what happened there. But, it was like watching it was like a Milli Vanilli concert. Everything was just out of sync. What is going on with this? So first of all, that ruined everything to begin with. So while I was trying to figure out the audio thing, I guess in hindsight, I didn't dislike the revealing the teams up front because you knew who was out right away. Once I was doing the alphabetical thing, I'm like, okay, wait, who was the last one on the other board? They're starting with Miami here. Okay, Marquette's out. Okay, so Marquette's out. So I guess I kind of like that. But one thing I missed, the best thing about the selection show is
the teams reveal.
Yeah, the teams reacted. And, like, obviously those things were on tape delay, but, like, it was, like, they showed, like, 10 seconds and, like, 8 seconds was them watching, and it's like 2 seconds, and they stand up. It's like, okay, let's get off this shot. It's like, I get it's on a tape delay, but just edit it a little better and just let it breathe a little more on the team celebrating. But that's the thing I think you missed by not going bracket by bracket. So when the teams reveal that they're in the bracket, they get that big celebration. The show was definitely missing that, and I hated the whole game show setup. Right? It was
right.
It looked like The Price is Right when they took. I think they tried to mess with a good thing. I think revealing all the teams up front could be tweaked a little bit, and I think you could still work with it. I just thought, again, the audio issues and just the delayed reactions by the teams, they just didn't look good. And so those were my bigger critiques than doing everything up front like they did.
Yeah, a couple of things I'll criticize for. One, all right, if you're going to do the teams alphabetically, A, that's fine. B, if you're going to do that, why do you have the automatic qualifiers separate? And you do some sort of reveal of the automatic qualifiers. If you don't know who the automatic qualifiers are, you're probably not watching the show.
I kind of like that because those are the ones who knew they were in at the beginning. So let's start with the obvious. Like, we already know these teams are in, so let's run down the automatics. What I would do if I were producing this thing, I would keep a PTI style guide on the right of bubble teams, like teams that you're not sure in or out, and like either highlight or like do a strike through each one when they're either in or out. That's what everyone is like really tuning in to see. It's like who's in, who's out. So I would have, like, it would be, again, it would be kind of busy, almost like kind of like a CNN, Fox News kind of thing, where you'd have the thing on the bottom, where you'd have like a bottom line on one side, and then you'd have like a rundown on the right side. So we would be kind of busy, but you need a lot of information out there too. So maybe I would kind of have, on the right side, I would have all the bubble teams that everyone is wondering whether they're in or out. So I would have a list of like,
well, in this case, it would have been like, 15 or 16 teams.
Yeah, like I'd make it big just to like add interest. Like let's say 20 teams, like even teams that are almost certainly out. So I'd put 20 teams on the right. So these are the teams that we're going to wonder. Let's start revealing them one at a time. Okay, so we're going to do all right, Loyola Chicago's in and Miami is in. So we're going to strike out Marquette. So we now know Marquette is out. And so I'd kind of do it that way. Just to give – so people can kind of follow along and of who's in and who's out. But like I think they had something going there, but I just think the execution I didn't love.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
It could be tweaked. It could be tweaked.
It could be tweaked, but here's the thing. So they did it for a 2-hour show. And this is what, and I even tweeted it. This was even if Marquette was in, I had to go to the grocery store, but like once I knew Marquette was in or out, I figured, all right, even if Marquette had been in, I was going to go to the grocery store and spend the next 45 minutes doing whatever, and I'd come back and either on Twitter or on the internet, I'd find where they were seated. Like, I didn't need – if you have it condensed to an hour where it's like, all right, I'm here for this hour, and I'm going to know everything I need to know. I'm going to get a little light bracket analysis, but I don't really need that, right? Like, Seth Davis and Charles Barkley and Kenny the Jet Smith are not like – hell, two out of the three of those guys really don't know anything about college basketball by their own admission. Like, I don't
need I mean, yeah, they just start, like, struggling. I mean, yeah. I mean, as much as you love Charles and Kenny on the NBA, like, they just kind of get a crash course on college basketball, like,
that
leading
day
up to the last few weeks. Although I will say this, Charles Barkley asked, like, the funniest question of the night. Did you see Charles Barkley interviewing the selection committee chairman?
I did not because I was at the grocery store.
Oh, all right. So anyway, so what he asked was, like, you know, they kind of like bring the chairman on, like kind of everyone at the table gets to ask a question. Well, Charles Barkley said, you know, it's based on seeding and seeds drop. You know, you said Oklahoma seeds dropped because they lost two out of their last eight. Well, what were they before they lost two out of the last eight? Were they a one seed? Like, what were they, a one seed before this? You still had Oklahoma in after they lose. So, like, it was kind of like an awkward question, but it actually was a very good point Barkley made. It's like, all right, if Oklahoma's a 10 seed the way they finished the season, what the hell were they, like, 2 months ago? And actually, the committee chairman kind of came back at him like, well, actually, yeah, Charles, if you remember back in January, they were, like, the number 4 team in the country. So, yeah, they were actually very high before they started losing all these games. But it was just kind of a funny moment to me. But like, to me, I don't know how everyone else does it, but on Selection Sunday, I'm always watching CBS, or in this case, TBS, because that's where it's revealed. But once I have the bracket, I switch over to ESPN, because I like hearing Billis. I like hearing Billis's takes, and then, of course, I always love to see which team Dickie V is just adamant that they should have been in. It's always amusing to me. So,
yeah, I mean, I'm fine with tweaking it. I don't want to be like an old man and get off my lawn kind of sort where we can't do something different. But it just this is going to sound so stupid. Like, the other tweak about it is, fine, if you're going to reveal them all, you know, in alphabetical order, that's fine. Can you do it all in one board? Like, it took me about 10 seconds to, like, re-react when Miami showed up as the first team on the new board, and I'm like, wait, Miami's after Marquette. Like,
counterpoint to that, though, like, you definitely don't want to put 68 teams on one board.
No,
you got to do it, but I get what you're saying. It's like when Miami came up, I had to think for a minute, wait, what was the last team on the other board?
You do like they do with the draft, right, where it kind of scrolls on the one side, right, where the team, like...
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, what I said, like, the bubble teams on one side, like similar to, like, during draft night, the best players available or bubble teams available, teams potentially in the field, something like that, like... Have as much information on the screen without being it too busy. Again,
yeah, actually, that makes sense. Like, if you list like list every team that's at large potential, like in alphabetical order on the left side, and as they announce teams, that list on the left side, right, and you're just showing the list that's a little bit above and a little bit after where they are on the alphabet. then as soon as a team comes up, you know, they announce Miami. Okay, Marquette gets crossed out. Miami gets highlighted, you know, and then it scrolls up some more or whatever, right?
That's, and then you could kind of have like the double scroll at the bottom, at-large teams that are in,
yes,
or automatic teams that are in. So, again, it would be busy while you're announcing everything, but once you get to the bracket, then like you kind of take some of that stuff away because then you'll have the bracket.
And well, and show let's, that on the let's right be side. Honest. Everyone has a 50-inch TV or better these days, and it's not like we really need to see Greg Gumbel and Kenny Smith not syncing up with their audio.
Yeah, yeah,
but
could be better.
Anyway,
could be better. Yeah. If Turner wants a consultant for this thing, I'd be happy to contribute.
Let's get your name advanced.
Yeah, if they want my takes, here they are. So
listen to this podcast, free advice.
Yeah, listen to this podcast for more great takes like this. But as always, we appreciate you guys listening to our takes, good or bad as they may be. Hit us with your feedback, what you thought about the selection show or Marquette's inclusion or non-inclusion, or the NIT. I'm on Twitter at JoeMcCann3. Phil is M-triple-O-F. 23. Cracked Sidewalks is the team handle. You can go to crackedsidewalks.com. That's where we post the podcast. Leave your comments there. Rate us and review us. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate that. And there's also a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well. If that's your thing, we post podcasts there as well. Phil, final thoughts before we get out of here?
I think we're going to have to post the meme from Billy Madison of nowhere during that rambling, incoherent podcast did you ever approach an answer. But other than that, let's just have some fun with the NIT.
And may God have mercy on your soul.
Absolutely.
All right, enjoy the NIT, everybody. Let's just try to have fun with it. Hopefully Marquette goes a few rounds. We'll probably stay on the same schedule podcast-wise, so next time we'll talk to you will probably be a week from now. Hopefully Marquette has two wins under their belt, and we're looking forward to a game with Notre Dame. So until then, seashells and balloons, everyone.